The U.S. stock market made its next leg lower this week, as I had correctly forecast in last week's podcast. The S&P 500 sold off more than 5% on the week, with the main catalyst for the routing being twofold: the inflation data that came out on Tuesday and Wednesday, and FedEx earnings, which came out Thursday evening. I'll cover the inflation data in a bit, but first I want to go over FedEx earnings call, because the stock got absolutely clobbered on Friday morning after the release of its numbers. The stock was down 23% on the lows, which is a tremendous downtrend in a stock that's considered a value stock that trades at a very low multiple of about 11 times earnings. But going over this earnings call, the miss was a 33% miss earnings per share. The earnings per share forecast was $5.14 of earnings per share. Instead, they came in with just $3.44 of earnings per share. So a huge miss, again, 33% miss on their earnings. Revenues actually came in slightly under expectations. The expectation was for $23.5 billion in revenues. Instead, they came in with just $23.2 billion of revenues. So they did miss on revenues, but they only missed on revenues slightly. So again, the stock traded down. A 33% miss in earnings is a very substantial miss for a company. But again, FedEx shares traded down 21% on Friday morning. The company announced significant cost-cutting measures following what was called softness in global volume for shipments. And the company announced that it will close 90 offices and 5 corporate locations and defer hiring for the future until further notice. Now, a key point on that is that FedEx actually employs 345,000 full-time employees. They are going to be laying off 10% of their workforce, which represents 34,500 jobs that just got lost in the economy. That is a huge number. They are one of the bigger employers in the global economy and in the U.S. economy. And when a company lays off 10% of its workforce, that usually means that more layoffs are coming in the future. Again, this is their first round of layoffs. Usually a company lays off in waves because they want to see if volumes are going to continue to decline. So we should expect more layoffs to come out of FedEx in the future, but also we should expect more layoffs to come out of a lot of major Fortune 500 companies, as again, the economy heads further into recession, which is clear in seeing this FedEx earnings report. Now, what was most notable, again, FedEx earnings demonstrate that stagflation is here in the economy. As I mentioned, they missed their earnings by 33%, but they barely missed on revenues. Now, first of all, they missed on revenues showing a slowdown in spending, but because they missed so much on their earnings, it's mostly due to their rising costs. Fuel costs are up, labor costs are up, and so that is putting tremendous pressure on their business model. And again, that is showing stagflation. The economy is slowing, growth is slowing, but we also see with that slowdown that prices continue to go up and remain elevated, putting a lot of cost pressures on big businesses like FedEx. Now, less people are also ordering discretionary stuff. They're paying more to buy less. So people are ordering a lot less stuff online, like on Amazon, for instance, online retailers, e-commerce. And so you have a lot less packages being shipped. And that's one of the reasons why FedEx missed on revenues as well. But again, FedEx is a global business. They are servicing hundreds of different countries. And they also reported weakness out of China, weakness out of Europe. Again, a lot of people in Europe are going through a severe recession as well, because oil and gas prices continue to remain extremely high over there, as they do in the U.S. And so those costs are putting downward pressure on economic growth. And so we see, again, we're having a global recession that is facing stagflation, as I've been saying. Now, we have $300 trillion of debt in the global economy, which is the greatest percentage of GDP to debt in world history. Now, of course, the way prices reacted to this report on Friday, we saw weakness in the stock market, as now markets have to start preparing for a recession. And we see also those pressures are in the bond market as well. But just to cover some of the price action from Friday, oil traded down to $84 a barrel. We closed the week at 84.93 per barrel for a barrel of West Texas crude. Gold prices got slammed on the week as well. In fact, gold broke good support at about 1676, which was the June lows from over a year ago. But gold traded down as low as 1666 per ounce, as low as I saw it, closed the week at 1673.36 for an ounce of gold. Stocks, as I mentioned before, got clobbered not only on the week, but on Friday as well. On Friday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 0.45%. The S&P 500 was down 0.72%. And the NASDAQ was the biggest carnage out of those major indices, down 0.9%. And even if we look at the Russell 2000, the small cap stocks, those were clobbered down 1.48% on Friday alone. So stocks closed lower on Friday, which extended the sell-off for the worst week since June for the S&P and the NASDAQ. Now, again, on the week, the S&P 500 traded down 5.15%. The NASDAQ was even worse. On the week, the NASDAQ lost 5.97%. Now, there was a spike in treasury yields that also caused for weakness in the stock market, especially, again, at the longer end of the risk curve. So that's why you see the Dow Jones was down, but the S&P 500 was down more, and the NASDAQ was down more than both of those indices, because, again, as we go further out on the risk curve in stocks, in the NASDAQ, those stocks are going to get clobbered if interest rates keep rising. And believe me, interest rates are going to keep rising. The yield on a U.S. 10-year Treasury bond is now at 3.455%, which is new monthly highs, and we continue to see weakness in the bond market as interest rates continue to spike up. You know, the TLT, the long-term government bond fund, down another 1.4% on the week. I have been talking about the TLT for a few weeks now and the weakness in long-term government bonds. If you recall, at the beginning of the year, I recommended shorting bonds. If you shorted bonds in January on the first trading day of the year, you're up more than 25% on that short against the TLT. Again, that was probably the most obvious trade anyone could have thought of. But again, bonds have a lot longer to fall here. And if you block out all of the noise, all the background noise, it is extremely obvious to see that bonds are going to keep trading down from here and interest rates are going to keep rising. Oil on the week was down from about $88 per barrel to, again, we closed at 84.93 per barrel. Oil did have some pressure on it as people are now fearing that we're heading into a deeper recession. In fact, most people on Wall Street up until the past few weeks have believed that we're not even in recession yet, even though we had two straight declining quarters of GDP growth, which is the definition of a recession. But now with FedEx's earnings, and especially on the interview that their CEO did with Jim Cramer on Thursday night, the CEO said that he sees we're now heading into a pretty severe recession. In fact, that CEO thinks we're already in recession. And that's one of the reasons for why he was blaming his earnings report on the economic weakness. But now that investors have digested that, many more investors are starting to come to terms with the fact that we are in recession and that things are going to get worse for the economy from here. Gold, again, traded down on the week. It started the week at $1,715 per ounce, finished the week at $1,673 per ounce, which is a multi-year low. It was a 2.4% weekly drop in the price of gold, which is a pretty significant drop for the yellow metal in a given week. But again, as I continue to mention, people keep getting frustrated with the gold trade. But to the extent that you own gold, you were down 2.4% on the week in that gold. Whereas had you owned the S&P 500, you'd have been down 5.15%. So to the extent you own gold, as opposed to the S&P 500, you saved yourself more than 2.5% in downside. So again, gold continues to get hit, both on higher interest rates nominally and on the idea that the Federal Reserve is going to come in and fight inflation. but it still continues to hold up relatively well, again, against other things that are in the marketplace, most namely stocks and, of course, bonds as well. But the key here is that, again, if you own gold, people keep selling gold because of inflation, which I'll cover in a bit. But again, gold is about preserving wealth, and that's exactly what it's doing this year. Gold is down, I believe, about 7% since 2022 started. And again, stocks are in a bear market, down more than 20% on the year. And we continue to see bonds get sold off as well. And that's another reason for why we're going to see even more weakness in the stock market as we move forward. The Thinking Long and Short podcast is brought to you by Perfect Spiral. Joe Miglio and John McCarthy take you on a football journey as they discuss the sport in depth. This 365, 24/7 football podcast discusses everything NFL. Off-season, draft, rumors, training camp, fantasy football, and of course, the season. Subscribe to the Perfect Spiral podcast today on Spotify. Again, as we move deeper into this recession, and it's becoming more and more clear that we are in a severe recession, as I've been saying since January we were going to be, it is really the time to start preparing your portfolio for what is to come with weakness in the economy coupled with high inflation. And prepping your portfolio for this recession is going to mean that you need to own defensive stocks, consumer staple stocks, businesses that sell products that people need, healthcare stocks, pharmaceuticals, commodity stocks, stuff that the Fed cannot print, like oil, food, things like that, right? Now, commodity stocks may suffer in the short term as the Fed continues to give this half-hearted effort towards fighting inflation, allowing nominal interest rates to rise. But as real interest rates continue to fall, as I've been saying, interest rates are going up, but not going up as high as the inflation rate. So as nominal interest rates keep rising, real interest rates keep falling, eventually investors are going to recognize that that is going to be very beneficial for commodities like oil and gold and agricultural products, things like that. So again, owning commodity stocks, even though there's been some pain in that sector of the market in the past few months, the energy stocks continue to hold up relatively well, even on recession fears. And again, a lot of the commodity stocks that are in agriculture are doing very well. So those are the types of stocks that you want to own in this stagflation economy. Now, again, you would want to sell stocks to recession-proof your portfolio. You want to sell stocks that are sensitive to higher interest rates. Some examples might be Google, Microsoft, Tesla, Nvidia, and especially the ARK fund. You know, Google, just to give you an example, is down 29% on the year. Now, some people might think, okay, well, that is a good bargain. Google is a good long-term company. And I don't deny the fact that Google is a tremendous long-term business. However, it's down 29% on the year for a reason, right? One of Google's biggest growth areas is, in fact, its cloud business. Same thing with Microsoft and same thing with Amazon. But just to stick with Google for a minute, the reason that it's down 29% on the year, even though it's a great business, is because a lot of investors have to start discounting the fact that there's not going to be a lot of growth in their business over the next several years. Again, I continue to say with the cloud software space, one of the biggest areas where businesses will stop spending money as we head deeper into this recession is going to be on labor, which is one of the reasons why we saw big layoffs coming from FedEx after this earnings report. But the second next place that businesses are going to stop spending money on is marketing, advertising, and data analytics in the cloud business. And so that's going to lead to a lot of tremendous downsizing and growth for businesses like Google, Microsoft, and Amazon. That is why Google is down 29% on the year. But another reason for why Google, Microsoft, Tesla, Nvidia, and so forth are down 25 to 29% on the year is because they are sensitive to higher interest rates. As interest rates go higher, stock prices, all else being equal, have to go lower. Because when you measure the value of a stock, you have to measure the present value of all future earnings discounted to the current rate of interest. And so as the current rate of interest rises, those future earnings that Google or Microsoft or Nvidia are going to have become less valuable, because you can get a higher return on investment if you put it into some short-term debt vehicle like a bond. Of course, bonds are not safe either, but that is the reason for why stocks are going down. So again, Google down 29% on the year. Microsoft down 27% on the year. Tesla down 24% on the year. And Nvidia down 56% on the year. Stocks that don't have any earnings, like stocks that comprise the ARK Innovation Fund, are definitely going to get hit very hard as we continue to see interest rates rising. And another way to look at the ARK Innovation names, or names that haven't been earning any money in the past couple years, businesses that haven't earned any money yet as it is, take, for example, DoorDash or Airbnb. If they couldn't earn money before the recession, how are they going to produce profits now as we have the economy heading into a severe recession globally, right? So again, these stocks like DoorDash or Airbnb are being valued for future earnings, and those future earnings are going to become less valuable in the present as interest rates rise. So again, you have to fade these stocks. If you own the ARK Innovation names, you got to sell them now. I know they're down a lot, but still, as we head further into this recession and as interest rates continue to rise because of inflation pressures, these stocks are going much lower. And also look at it this way. If you bought a stock, say, for example, like Teladoc. Teladoc, I believe, is down 90% on the year or something close to that, right? But think about the risk. And I want to look actually where the stock price is. But if you think about the risk, if a stock is at trading at $100 per share, for example, and it then goes down to $20 per share, if you buy the stock at $20 per share, what's your downside risk? It's 100%. So even if a stock is down 60, 70, or 80%, the downside risk is still 100% if you buy the stock now or if you still own the stock now. So that is just a warning for people who own these types of names. Now, again, as I look at Teladoc, I've got it pulled up here. It's down 77.5% from the highs, but it's now at $30 a share, down from $150 a share at the highs. So if you come in and buy Teladoc now at $30 a share, your downside risk is still 100%. But again, these are the stocks that, again, they couldn't earn money in a booming economy. How are they going to earn money now? And as interest rates rise, the multiples on these businesses have to contract, and there's a lot of downside risk in the markets here, most particularly in the growth stocks, the tech sector, and in stocks that are not earning money right now. I want to get into some of the economic data we got this week. Again, the biggest data on the week came Tuesday with the release of the August inflation numbers with the August Consumer Price Index. There was a 0.1% increase in consumer prices in the month of August. We were expecting a 0.1% decline, but instead, again, prices came in 0.1% higher. Now, we've had a 5.3% rise in the consumer price index so far in 2022. And if you annualize that number and extrapolate it out for 12 months, we are on pace to have 7.95% increase in consumer prices for 2022. If you look to the core CPI month over month, however, which also came in on Tuesday, again, this strips out food and energy prices. Stripping out food and energy, prices in August rose by 0.6%. We were only expecting to get a 0.3% rise there. And again, instead, we came in at 0.6. But this shows that despite the drop in oil prices for the month of August, we still see huge inflation pressures throughout the broad economy. Again, prices rose by 0.6% on the month. That's a big increase for 1 month, and that's across the board in different prices. So the core CPI has risen by 4.8% in 2022. And again, the annualized number is 7.2% increase for the year that we are on pace for. And again, so much for the Federal Reserve being able to hide behind food and energy as an excuse for why prices are going up. Again, you continue to hear things like the Putin price hikes, that inflation is being caused because of the Russia-Ukraine conflict. Well, if that's the case, we would see that food and energy would be causing most of the pressures on upward prices. But instead, again, it's broad-based. We see prices rising across the board in every sector and industry in the economy. Now, prices were 8.3% higher this August than they were in last August. But look at some of the price increases from year over year from last August to this August. Energy prices up 23.8%. Food prices up 11.4%. New vehicles up 10.1%. And shelter is up 6.2%. Of course, you have to put an asterisk on the shelter number because that is a fake made-up number that the government puts in the CPI. I'll go over the real costs of shelter in a little bit. But even if you look at medical costs are up 25% since last August alone. So again, we see that consumers get no relief, not on food, not on energy, not on vehicles, not on shelter, not on medical costs, not on insurance, not on clothes, not on electronics, not on anything. Prices as measured by the Consumer Price Index are up 15.4% since July 2020. In just 27 months, we have had a 15.4% increase in consumer prices, and we have yet to have a month where prices have actually declined for on a monthly basis. So again, inflation continues to be a huge problem. And again, the Federal Reserve is falling further and further and further behind fighting inflation because they've raised interest rates by 2.5% so far this year, and still inflation is running way out of control, and we are on pace to have much higher inflation than 2.5% as we move towards the end of the year. So the Fed is more behind the inflation curve now than they were when 2022 started. And again, those 2.5% increases in overnight lending rates for the economy has already caused for the stock market to be down 20% on the year, tech stocks to be down 25 to 30% on the year, and for a global slowdown and for layoffs coming out of bigger businesses like FedEx, Walmart, and what have you. And the unemployment rate still stubbornly remains at 3.7%. But that's only because you have people coming out of retirement to go back into the labor market because their retirement is no longer enough of a nest egg for them to live off of. You have people taking multiple jobs, taking secondary part-time jobs to make ends meet because inflation is burdening the middle class. So while unemployment rate still remains at 3.7%, we still have a lot more people not working productively. And we have a lot of people struggling. And so the unemployment rate doesn't properly measure the health of the U.S. or the global economy at this point. Now, again, what's most important to note is how stocks reacted to the release of the CPI inflation data on Tuesday. The markets got absolutely clobbered on Tuesday following the release of the CPI. The S&P 500 had its worst trading day since the beginning of the lockdowns of COVID 2 summers ago. The S&P 500 was down 4.32% on Tuesday alone. The NASDAQ dropped over 5% on the day, and we had weakness across the board. Even if you look at the NASDAQ 100, which is the top 100 stocks in the NASDAQ, every single one of those 100 stocks were down on Tuesday. So there was nowhere to hide, and this shows that all investors were offsides going into this inflation print. And I kept hearing all of last week, investors, everyone on CNBC, analysts, all cheering about peak inflation being here, slapping high fives, saying, oh, we're finally out of this inflation mess and inflation's going to start to moderate and come down. Again, almost everyone was wrong heading into this print. And we know that everyone was expecting lower inflation because of the reaction in the markets. Again, there was a huge reaction showing that many investors were offsides. And then in an effort to try and get back on sides, investors had to sell stocks severely. And again, there was nowhere to hide on Tuesday with the reading of high inflation. But also with that, again, in the gold market, we continue to see this stubborn behavior where every time we get an inflation number released that is higher than expected, investors sell gold and buy dollars. And again, this makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. Now, the reason for this is because investors see a higher inflation number and they immediately think the Federal Reserve is going to be pressured to raise interest rates even more. We're going to see interest rates rise in the bond market. And so therefore, those higher interest rates are bearish for gold. I've talked about this several times on the podcast, but for the new listeners, again, if nominal interest rates rise, that is not bearish for gold if real interest rates, which include inflation, are falling. And in fact, if you have nominal interest rates that are highly negative, for example, right now, interest rates are at negative 5.5% in the economy, accounting for inflation. If interest rates go from negative 5.5% to negative 4.5%, that should not have any fundamental impact on the price of gold whatsoever. The one problem with owning gold, or the one downside to it in a normal economy, is by owning gold, you are sacrificing the interest you would receive by owning cash or some short-term bonds. But in the case we have now, if you own gold, you're not sacrificing any interest on owning cash or bonds because the interest rate you're getting on those cash or bonds is negative. You're losing money. So if interest rates go from negative 5.5% to negative 4.5%, that should not have any negative effect on the price of gold whatsoever. However, you have currency traders and investors remain completely clueless to how bad and how embedded this inflation problem is. And again, month after month after month after month, we continue to get inflation data much worse than expected, and people keep buying gold and selling dollars, anticipating that eventually we're going to hit peak inflation. Like I said, it's not going to happen. But the market is now pricing in a 75% chance of a 75 basis point rate increase by the Fed next week, and a 25% chance of a 100 basis point rate increase by the Fed next week. But either way, the markets can't handle much higher interest rates. We see how fragile the market is. Again, it is not normal to see stocks trading down 4.5% to 5% in one day alone. And again, the markets are getting clobbered on the anticipation of these higher rate hikes. And eventually, the Fed is going to push the economy too far off of a cliff and into a severe recession as they continue these rate hikes in their half-hearted inflation fight. But again, we continue to see that the Fed remains way behind the inflation curve, as we see in the CPI that was released on Tuesday. The one piece of economic data that we did get on the week that came in very good was the NFIB Small Business Index. Now, we were expecting this to come in at 90.9. Instead, it came in at 91.8. And this represents, this is basically a survey of small businesses which asks respondents to rate the relative level of economic conditions, including the labor market, inventories, sales, spending, inflation and earnings, wages, credit markets, etc. I don't know why this is coming in better than expected. I don't really know how they collect the data for this, but it did come in better than expected. So I don't want to ignore it. I don't want people to think I'm cherry picking bad economic data. So this here you have it is the one piece of economic data that actually came in with a good number on the week. But moving past that, when we get the economic optimism levels, that came in at 44.7%, which is much higher than the last few months, but it's much lower than the last few years. So the trend line continues to remain down on economic optimism. And of course, you can only imagine why. Again, stocks are down 20%. We have a slowdown in the economy, a slowdown in growth. The housing market has come to a screeching halt. I'll cover that in a little bit. But again, people are remaining less and less optimistic on the markets and on the economy in general. Now, on Wednesday, we also got more inflation data, the producer price index month over month. Now, that did come in at a 0.1% decrease. So there we saw prices for businesses declined by 0.1% on the month. That also followed a 0.5% decrease in producer prices last month in the month of July. But when we move to the core producer price index month over month, which again strips out food and energy input costs, prices for businesses excluding food and energy rose by 0.4%. So what does that mean? That means that the only reason that prices across the board fell for producers is because of the weighting of the drop in oil prices in August. Now, again, we continue to sell oil out of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. We have basically run that dry. There is only a small portion, a small sliver of the Strategic Oil Reserve left to use. Once we run that dry, the supply of oil is going to cease again, and we're going to see oil prices move up in the future. So while this month we had a little bit of pressures eased on producers, producers are going to have to be looking forward to a tighter oil market, especially as we head into the winter months where we use more oil and more energy in general. And so producer prices not only rose on the month if you strip out food and energy, but they're going to continue to rise as we move into the fall months. So again, more pressure on inflation as we head into the fall, which is again putting upward pressure on interest rates in the bond market. Now, we also got inflation data for the UK. There, the CPI in the UK year over year rose by 9.9%. The core CPI, again, stripping out food and energy, is still up 6.3% year over year in the UK. Again, there is inflation pressures and recession pressures all over the global economy, not just the United States, but in Europe, the UK, in Canada, in Japan, and in China as well. And this is truly going to be a stagflation period for the entire global economy. And there is going to be a lot of pressure on global growth as we move forward. Now, I want to move to Thursday. We got the retail sales numbers month over month. There we were expecting a decrease of 0.1. Instead, we got an increase of 0.3. Now, you might think, okay, well, that's good economic data. No, it's not. Because, again, retail sales don't include inflation. So consumers are not buying more goods. They are paying more higher prices to buy less goods. The only reason retail sales rose month over month by 0.3% is because the prices of everything that people need to buy is up much more than it was over the last couple months. So again, you have inflation is up 15.4% in the last 2 years. That is causing for a bump in retail sales, which is not adjusted for inflation. Consumers are spending more to buy less. Core retail sales month over month, that strips out automobile sales, that actually declined by 0.3%. So we see, again, as we saw last month, core retail sales comes in much lower than retail sales. Again, very bad news for the auto markets and for automakers, right? People can't afford to buy new cars. They can't afford to replace their old cars. I talked about the outperformance of AutoZone relative to the rest of the markets this year. AutoZone is one of the best performing stocks on the year. Why is that? Because again, consumers cannot afford to buy new cars, especially as interest rates are rising and credit conditions are starting to tighten a little bit. And so therefore, people are forced to continue to fix up their old clunker cars. And so that's why we continue to see more and more pressure on the auto market. And for all the people that own the companies like Tesla, Ford, GM, any auto stocks, this should be a very ominous sign. Again, this is not the first month that this has happened. This has been a trend that core retail sales, which strips out auto sales, has come in lower than retail sales in general. We also got the Empire State Manufacturing Index. There we had a decrease of 1.5. So again, more signs that the economy is contracting. If we look to the Philly Fed Manufacturing Index, that came in even worse. There we were expecting a positive 2.4 reading. Instead, we got a negative 9.9 reading, a big miss there. So again, manufacturing activity declining in both major surveys, and again, more evidence the economy is slowing. Unemployment claims came in at 213,000. Those are, again, initial unemployment claims, and we continue to see that week after week after week, we have more and more and more people filing for unemployment for the first time. Next week, we're going to have even more people file for unemployment for the first time. Again, FedEx just announced a layoff of 34,500 workers, and I'm sure they're not the only business that's going to be laying people off in the foreseeable future. Now, one pressure that we did have come down was on inflation was import prices month over month, but we didn't have it come down as much as expected. Economists were expecting import prices for the month to drop by 1.3%. Instead, they only dropped by 1%. So we do see that with oil prices having gone down over the past month, there is less pressure on import prices. Again, I don't expect that to last. The oil markets are headed much higher from here. They've been holding this support of $84 per barrel very nicely, and we're going to see supply is going to remain constrained over the foreseeable future, the next several years, but especially as we head into the winter months. So again, capacity utilization came in at 80% versus 80.2% expected. Industrial production month over month declined by 0.2%. We were expecting it to not decline at all. Business inventories coming in at 0.6% month over month. So again, we continue to see tons of pressure showing that we are not only in a recession now, but headed for a much deeper, much more severe economic slowdown and recession. Meanwhile, we did get some news out of China this week. China retail sales increased year over year by 5.4%. Their fixed asset investment increased by 5.8%, and their industrial production increased by 4.2%. So as most economies continue to struggle around the world, China continues to flourish. Now, of course, there is a real estate bubble that is huge in China, and that could very well pop in the next year or two, or who knows when it could pop. Bubbles can last much longer than we think. But the big thing that we need to understand is that when that real estate bubble and that debt bubble pops in China, China does not have any inflation pressures in their economy. They are one of the only major economies in the world without inflation pressures. So what that's going to allow is once that bubble pops there, the Chinese central bank and the Chinese government's going to be able to stimulate the economy by dropping interest rates the way the US did in 2008. And so their markets could head on a very long run from there. That's one of the reasons why I think that the Chinese internet stocks could be very good investments here if you're willing to stomach the risk. Again, you could buy them in the KWEB, which is the Chinese internet ETF out on the markets. Finally, on Friday, we got European inflation data. Again, as we see in the UK, the rest of Europe is continuing to struggle with inflation as well. Final CPI year-over-year numbers, 9.1% for the Eurozone, and the core CPI year-over-year numbers at 4.3%. Again, the core strips out food and energy. So we see that energy prices remain extremely high for Europeans. And again, that is what's causing the recessionary pressures over there in Europe. Same thing, what's causing the recessionary pressures in the US is people are struggling to make ends meet because inflation is way too high and destroying the middle class household's budget. Consumer sentiment numbers, again, came in weaker than expected. We were expecting 60.0. Instead, they came in at 59.5. And lastly, preliminary inflation expectations came in at 4.6%. So again, we continue to see that people expect more inflation in the future, but they don't expect as much inflation as we're actually going to have. Now, one thing that I do want to cover also is on Monday and Tuesday, we had 10-year and 30-year bond auctions for U.S. government bonds. Now, this is where government debt is auctioned off to foreign dealers, foreign investors, sovereign wealth funds, and pension funds, and what have you. Now, the expectation on Monday was that the average yield that was accepted, the highest yield that would be taken for bonds was 2.4%. Instead, it was 3.33%. And on Tuesday, They were also expecting a 2.4% as the highest yield accepted on bonds. Instead, it was 3.5%. So there's much more upward pressure on interest rates in the bond market than most people believe to think. And again, I even heard a lot of people on CNBC this week recommending bonds as an investment here. You know, if you buy a U.S. one-year government bond, a T-bill, you can actually get a 4% rate of interest on that bond. And so a lot of people have been recommending those bonds, especially as we have a lot of uncertainty and a lot of volatility in the stock market. But again, as I continue to mention, there is absolutely no reason whatsoever why you should buy a bond that yields 4% when the inflation rate is 8.5%. And the only reason most analysts continue to recommend these bonds is because, again, they don't understand how bad this inflation problem is and how embedded inflation is in the economy. If you are going to buy a bond that yields 4%, you have to expect that within the next year, inflation is going to come down way lower than that 4%. So you would have to expect that inflation is going to decrease year over year by 4.5% or more in order to buy that bond. And again, that is not going to happen. And the reason that's not going to happen is because we continue to see interest rates are much lower than the inflation rate, which is going to continue to allow people to keep spending on their credit cards, take out more loans for whatever they need to buy. And that's going to give businesses the leeway to keep increasing their prices. And again, I continue to hear major CEOs like the one from FedEx say that they have more and more cost pressures and they need to start passing those costs on to customers even more. Unilever was another company, the consumer staples company. Last week, their CEO announced that they're going to push more price increases through for the fall months. Same thing with Walmart, same thing with Chipotle, same thing with McDonald's. There are much more price increases coming in future months. So there is no way you should buy any type of bonds here because bonds have huge interest rate risk and huge inflation risk right now. Another thing I wanted to cover was we got long-term purchases. Now, what this measures is the difference in value between foreign long-term security purchases by U.S. citizens and U.S. long-term security purchases by foreigners during a given period. Now, during this month, we had a net of $21.4 billion, which is a very low number for this this index. And what this means is there is a lot less foreign investor money coming into U.S. assets like bonds and stocks. Now, one of the reasons this is important is because a lot of the U.S. stocks are owned by foreign investors around the world. But as we see that there's recessionary pressures all over the world, what we should start to see is there's going to be less money from less tax revenue all over the world that foreign governments and foreign sovereign wealth funds are going to be able to continue to invest in the U.S. stock market. So that's another thing that's going to be a headwind for the stock market in future months and future years. That's something that's been a major tailwind and a major benefit to the stock market in the past decade. But again, we see this as continuing to slow. Now, the Federal Reserve is going to have its interest rate decision come out on Wednesday this week, but also this week, the Swiss National Bank has their interest rate decision. Markets are expecting for the Swiss National Bank to raise interest rates by a half percentage point. The Swiss National Bank is one of the bigger owners of U.S. stocks in the world. Now, if they're going to start doing quantitative tightening, that means that they're going to have less money to invest in the stock market. In fact, they might actually have to start selling some of their U.S. stock holdings in order to make room for that quantitative tightening in Switzerland. So we'll see how that goes moving forward. But I want to pay very close attention to these long-term purchases of investments from both U.S. citizens and foreigners, especially as we head deeper into a global recession. One last point on that is that if we continue to have more and more people get laid off, especially from major corporations, that's a lot less people that are going to be contributing to their 401ks. So that means that we could have less money flowing in passively from investors. That's been another big beneficiary for the stock market over the past decade is the rise in passive investing through more 401k contributions. Again, as more and more people start to get laid off, you're going to have less people investing passively into the stock market. And especially as people are trying to cope with higher inflation, they might not have as much room in their budget to make their max contributions to their 401ks. And so instead, we might see people lower their percentages for the amount that they're investing in their 401k because they're struggling so much to buy food and gas and clothes and electronics and medical care that they have no choice but to invest less over the next couple years. With that, I want to cover the real estate market. I haven't talked all that much about the real estate market in the past few weeks, but 30-year mortgage rates reached 6% this week for the first time since 2008. Now, not only is that very ominous because, and obviously in 2008, we had the huge housing crash from the 2008 financial crisis, but we're starting to see a lot of data points, and I keep seeing like a lot of data points that keep pointing to markers from the 2007-2008 period. For example, we have the lowest savings rate right now since 2007. Credit card usage is the highest that it's been since 2008. So it's a very ominous sign, not only for the housing market, but for the economy in general, that we keep seeing that we have the lowest this since 2007, the highest this since 2008. Because we keep seeing that things look so similar in economic data to 2008, it's amazing to me that so many investors remain oblivious to just how bad this situation is going to get, not only for the economy, but for the stock market, again, as we head forward into the fall months. But if you look at the housing situation, one of the things you would hear from people who think that the housing market is going to continue to do very well, you know, Dave Ramsey is one of the finance gurus out there that I keep hearing. He keeps saying that there's no reason why the real estate market's going to crash. He actually thinks that the real estate market's going to continue to appreciate by 3 or 4% each year over the next few years. And he keeps pointing to the fact that there's not enough inventory for all the buyers that are out there. And as long as the amount of buyers are lower than the amount of inventory out there, we can't have a severe pullback in housing. But a lot of people made the same mistake in 2008. In 2008, a lot of people were saying, we can't have a pullback in the housing market because there's not enough inventory to meet all the demand for housing. Well, of course, people were missing the point that the only reason there was demand for housing is because there was a huge credit bubble, and that demand can go away very quickly. But also, as you have more and more people get stuck in their homes, you have supply can get constrained, but as people start to sell their homes because they lost their job and they can't pay their mortgage, or you see that people get evicted from their homes because they can't make the mortgage payment anymore, inventory can come on the market very quickly. Now, the year-on-year change in active listings from August 2021 to August 2022, according to Realtor.com, we see that there's 177% increase in inventory in Phoenix, one of the more hotter real estate markets in the last couple of years. And a lot of big cities like Raleigh, North Carolina, 164% increase. Again, this is just over 1 year increase in inventory, right? Colorado Springs, 157% increase. Lakeland, Florida, 142% increase. Austin, Texas, 139% increase. Nashville, 129% increase. Fort Myers, Florida, 119% increase. Salt Lake City, 105% increase, Las Vegas, 93% increase, and so on and so forth. I can keep naming them off, but the point is that inventory is starting to go up a lot. And I think what you have is a lot of people are starting to notice that the housing market has been slowing a lot lately. I have a few people I know trying to sell their homes, and they haven't been able to sell them in the past month and a half. Not only have they not been able to sell them, but there's been a lot less offers coming through. And even when the offers have been coming through for the few people I know that have their houses on the market, they're not as high as they initially expected. So I think you have a lot of people are putting their houses on the market now to try and get rid of them before the market completely implodes, but they're not finding any buyers because mortgage rates have gone up so much in the past year. Now, mortgage rates are still at historic lows, believe it or not, but they are much higher than they have been in the past. And so that's been a shock to the markets. One of the reasons that obviously that housing prices have gotten so high is because interest rates have remained so low for so long. But if you just put it in perspective, again, the current 30-year fixed rate mortgage is now well over 6%. It was just 2.84% over a year ago. Now, if you look at two different situations, a year ago, if you were going to buy a $500,000 house at 2.84%, which is where mortgage rates on the 30-year mortgage were at a year ago, your payment was going to be around $2,460 a month. Today, if you try and buy a $350,000 home at a 6.28% interest rate, which is where mortgage rates topped out at this week, your monthly payment would be $2,450. So you would basically have the same mortgage payment now on a $350,000 house that you would have on a $500,000 house a year ago. Now, that is a that represents a 42% increase in the price of shelter for buying a home now. And again, as I mentioned before in the CPI, the CPI showed that shelter prices were up 6.2% from this August to last August. Well, how could that even be possible if the price of buying a home and servicing the mortgage is up 42% year over year? So again, clearly the government is lying about the inflation numbers, and the inflation numbers, even with the government lying about them, are still horrific. If the government was actually telling the truth about how bad inflation was in the housing and the renting market, inflation numbers would be much closer to 20%. So that's what the real inflation metrics are if you actually look at things honestly. But again, you have investors continue to believe the CPI and remain clueless about how bad inflation is in the economy. Again, if you're a real person in the middle class, then and you're dealing with these price increases of trying to buy a home, you can't go by the CPI. This is affecting your actual budget in real life. But think about the burden that this is putting on both the lower middle class and millennials and first-time home buyers, right? The new expense of buying a home is going to force people to keep renting. People that are renting now that want to become homeowners are going to be forced to continue to rent for the foreseeable future because they just simply cannot afford the prices of the homes where they're at. And so what that's going to actually do is it's going to give landlords the leverage to keep raising rent prices. And again, I continue to say this, but once rent prices increase in the economy, they never go back down. There's a lot of prices that once they increase, they never go away. And so as prices are up 15.4% over the past 2 years, as the government measures them, those prices are never going to go back down. But in fact, these prices are going to keep going up. Again, if people are forced to continue to rent, that's a lot more demand to rent an apartment building. So that, again, is going to allow landlords to continue to increase their prices of rents. But also, I think one of the things going on here is that a lot of people in the housing market are yet to reprice their homes. I mean, we still have most people in the economy are employed productively. They're still earning a paycheck. We also haven't seen the economy completely implode just yet. It's coming, but it hasn't imploded completely just yet. So I think a lot of people, like I said, they're putting their homes on the market. They're trying to get the bubble prices selling their homes right now. But pretty soon, people are going to realize that if they don't lower their home prices, there's nobody going to be there to buy their home. So people are going to either be forced to stay in the home they have now, or they're going to have to sell it at a much lower price. If, again, you look at the measurement of the cost of a $500,000 30-year loan last year versus a $350,000 loan this year, that means that there's about a 30 to 40% correction that has to come in the housing market in the future if people are going to sell their homes. So again, a lot of pressure in the housing market. And this is with the Federal Reserve having barely started quantitative tightening yet. Again, when the Fed does quantitative tightening, it has to take not only the U.S. Treasury bonds it owns, but also the mortgage bonds that it owns and sell them into the open market. That is going to put downward pressure on bond and mortgage bond prices and upward pressure on bond and mortgage bond interest rates. So interest rates, as high as they are now, the 30-year mortgage at 6.2%, those mortgage rates are going much, much higher, especially if the Federal Reserve continues to ramp up its inflation fight. So again, the housing market can only go down from here. It's basically come to a screeching halt, but it's going to keep going further and further down, especially as people recognize that if they want to sell their homes, they're going to have to completely reprice them for reality, which means a 30 to 40% correction is coming in the housing market. But in the short term, the rising interest rates from the Fed raising the overnight lending rate and starting quantitative tightening will cause much more price pressures in the foreseeable future, because higher interest rates are what is necessary to curb inflation and stop inflation from continuing to rise long term. But in the short term, those rising interest rates are actually going to cause prices to go higher, because to the extent that you have credit card debt or any adjustable debt rate debt, the cost of servicing that debt is going to continue to increase in the near term from interest rates going up. So to the extent that you have a credit card payment, your minimum monthly payment might increase. Or to the extent that you have an adjustable rate mortgage, the cost of servicing your mortgage is going to increase, right? Also, you're going to have businesses that are that have debt that they have to service. If the cost of that debt goes up, businesses are going to have higher pressures on their input costs. And so they're going to have higher cost pressures, and they're going to have to pass those higher cost pressures onto their customers. So again, interest rates, while that's the way you actually stop inflation in the long run, in the short run, that puts a lot more pressure on inflation as we move deeper into the fall months. Of course, the Fed rate hikes aren't going to be enough to slow inflation down in the longer term, and that's going to cause tons of economic burden on the U.S. economy moving forward. Now, speaking of the Federal Reserve doing quantitative tightening, first of all, Wednesday this week, they have the conclusion of the FOMC meeting, and they are expected to raise interest rates by 75 basis points to take the overnight lending rate from 2.5% to 3.25%. I expect they will do 75 basis points. There's a 25% chance being priced into the market they do 100 basis points. I doubt that is going to happen because, again, there's tons of pressure on the markets already. The last thing Powell wants to do is see stocks come down another 10 or 15% over the next month. So they're probably going to stick with 75 basis points. However, what we do see, we got, again, as we get every Thursday, the release of the Fed balance sheet numbers. Now, I mentioned on last week's podcast that 2 weeks ago, the Fed balance sheet did shrink a little bit, but barely. It went from $8.826 trillion to $8.882 trillion. So it basically went down just 0.05% 2 weeks ago. Now, this week, the Fed balance sheet actually increased slightly. So instead of selling bonds to promote quantitative tightening and shrink the money supply, they actually printed more money this week and flooded it out into the economy. Now, they didn't print that much money, but they still printed money and they still put more money in the economy, and they didn't shrink their balance sheet. The balance sheet this week went from $8.822 trillion to $8.832 trillion. And again, bond prices still fell despite this buying from the Fed. And most importantly, bond prices still fell in the absence of the Fed selling bonds this week. So if the Fed actually continues on the course they're supposed to continue to shrink the money supply and doing quantitative tightening and thus selling the bonds and mortgage-backed securities off their balance sheet, the bond market is going to completely implode. If the bond market completely implodes, the stock market's going to completely implode because, again, a crash in the bond market means much higher interest rates. Much higher interest rates means that the future earnings, the future value of all cash flows from businesses are less valuable to the discount rate, as I mentioned before. So again, the Federal Reserve is going very slow on their balance sheet reduction because they understand just how difficult this task is going to be, because the economy is completely dependent, as is the stock market, on extremely artificially low interest rates. Again, as I mentioned, If mortgage rates rise much more, the housing market's going to completely implode. Prices on houses are going to come down 20, 30, 40%. And again, if the housing market slows, that is a huge piece of the U.S. economy. There are a lot of jobs in the housing sector. And so a lot of people are going to get laid off. You're going to have people no longer able to take out equity lines of credit out of their homes. That means less ability to be able to borrow to continue to spend. So again, you have a major slowdown in not just the U.S. economy, but the global economy, and you have inflation continuing to run out of control, even as the economy continues to come to a screeching halt. As I've been saying all along, that is stagflation. That is what is here to stay. We are not even close to being out of the woods yet. We are headed for a major, major economic catastrophe in the next decade, and you had better be prepared with your portfolio. As I mentioned, you got to own defensive stocks. You got to own businesses that sell things that people need, that can pass their costs on to their customers. You cannot own cyclical businesses that rely on a good economy. You cannot own high tech or growth businesses that are reliant on low interest rates. And you have to prepare. You cannot prepare by owning bonds. You cannot prepare by owning dollars, because both those assets are depreciating extremely quickly. Again, that's why you have to be in stocks, but you have to own the right stocks. You have to own the defensives, the consumer staples companies, commodities. You have to own gold as a safe haven asset, hedge against inflation. Again, I know the gold trade has been extremely frustrating, but still, gold is down only 7% on the year when stocks have gotten completely clobbered. And once people realize how embedded inflation is in the economy and that the Fed can't raise interest rates high enough to fight that inflation because the economy is too dependent on low interest rates, people are going to be selling dollars in a mass exodus and buying gold. And that is when the price of gold is going to soar. But again, as we head into the fall months, the economy is getting weaker and weaker and weaker. And once people recognize how weak the economy is, they'll recognize the Fed can't fight inflation by raising interest rates. And that is when the party is over in both stocks and bonds. But we're, again, this Wednesday, we're going to get the Fed rate hike. It's going to probably be 75 basis points. We're going to probably go from 2.5% to 3.25% on overnight lending rates. Thursday, the Swiss National Bank is probably going to raise rates. We have on Friday, a bunch of manufacturing data comes in on the economy. And again, we have $300 trillion of global debt, which is the greatest percentage of debt to GDP in world history. The biggest bubble in financial market history is about to implode this fall, and you had better make sure that you are prepared for that to happen. All of the evidence is there, and what can't go on forever won't.